Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Wednesday, July the 15th. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. We're going to start with an update on the investigation into the death of former Maidstone MP Anne Widdecombe. In yesterday's episode, we told you how anti-terror police are now leading the inquiry. Well, they've now said 78-year-old Miss Widdecombe, who represented part of the county in Parliament for 23 years, was killed in a targeted attack. She was found at her home in Devon last Thursday. Head of Counter-Terrorism Policing, Assistant Commissioner Lawrence Taylor, has been updating reporters.
Firstly, as you will understand, this incident has had a deeply distressing impact on Miss Widdecombe's family, and we're doing all we can to support them alongside our colleagues in Devon and Cornwall. The thoughts of everybody at Counter-Terrorism Policing are with them at what is a very challenging time. As we confirmed yesterday, Counter-Terrorism South East are now leading the investigation into the death of Anne Widdecombe. This is due to new information and evidence coming to light following the arrest of a 28-year-old man on Saturday in South Yorkshire. I know there will be lots of questions about what that new information is, but this is a live investigation, so I'm limited on the details that I can give. However, it is clear that this was a targeted attack. We are still working to understand the extent of any planning or preparation and the motivation that sits behind that attack. And I do not want to comment further on this at this stage of our inquiries. Extensive searches have taken place at an address in Rotherham, and scenes remain in place as that activity continues. We have also been granted a warrant of further detention, which means the suspect can now be held for questioning for up to 7 days under the Terrorism Act. He remains under arrest on suspicion of commission, preparation, or instigation of acts of terrorism, as well as on suspicion of murder.
Meantime, incoming Prime Minister Andy Burnham has said a serious review is needed into MPs' security.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today: in a woman who left a motorcyclist and his passenger with severe injuries following a crash in Swanley has avoided a prison sentence. A court was told Halle Bay Osborne Holland collided with the pair after pulling out of a petrol station without looking in August last year. The 22-year-old from Gorse Road in Stroud pleaded guilty and has been banned from driving for a year. She's also got to do unpaid work. A Kent man says his stepdad, who's in prison in Iran, has been given an additional 2-year sentence for talking to the media. Craig Foreman and his wife Lindsay were locked up for 10 years in February after being convicted of spying, which they both deny. Joe Bennett from Folkestone has been campaigning for their release since they were first detained in January 2025. A man's been jailed after a house in Greenhithe was converted into a cannabis factory. More than 70 plants were found being grown at the property in Sayer Close in March. A 33-year-old from Enfield has been locked up for 2 years. This is the moment police found him standing in the bathroom of the property in Greenhithe.
Police! One offender, hands behind your back now. All in order, all in order.
Keep your hands where I can see them.
Careful. Right, mate, you're under arrest for being concerned in the supply of a Class B drug, all right? Do not have to say anything, but may harm defence. Do not mention when questioned something which they run in court.
A man who took part in burglaries targeting motorbikes advertised for sale online has avoided jail. Laurie Buttigieg and another man took a £3,000 vehicle from a garage in Ashford in March. The 40-year-old from Atfield Walk in Eastbourne has been given a suspended sentence and ordered to do unpaid work. We've got more now on news we brought you in brief yesterday. South East Water's been told to spend more than £30 million on improvements following major outages here in Kent. The regulator's been investigating the company and identified a number of failings. The cash will come from shareholders and won't affect customer bills. Well, Lynn Parker is from Ofwat and she's been speaking to Ollie Leader from the local Democracy Reporting Service.
This marks the conclusion of 3 investigations into South East Water with a £30.5 million redress package and also legally binding commitments to take actions that will make things better for their customers. So the £30.5 million goes to address some of the failings that we have found in our investigations. And what we found was that there was a lack of ownership problems, and that created a lack of resilience in the network, which meant that there were too many times when water supply was lost, particularly in this region. So what's happening with the redress packages? There's 30.5 million of shareholders' money, which is being invested into actions that will improve the resilience. And that includes things like on-site storage for vulnerable sites like schools and care homes. We found there were failings where when supply was lost, South East Water was very slow to react. And some of these vulnerable sites lost water, and that's totally unacceptable. So the redress package will go to fixing those sorts of problems rather than a fine, which would just go straight to the Treasury.
Because obviously, you can speak to anyone here, the level of frustration is phenomenal. How will this improve the confidence of customers here? Because many of them feel the infrastructure isn't really here. They don't trust South East Water, and they don't necessarily know where this money's actually really going to go. Well, what would you say to reassure customers on the high street here about this huge redress package?
Many of the problems that we found were around poor planning. So the leadership of South East Water wasn't planning proactively to make sure there was resilience in the system. So that meant that when there was an incident like a heat wave or a storm, they weren't able to respond because they hadn't kept the right levels. Their balance and demand was off. So basically what this means is they have now accepted their failings. The leadership team has taken ownership, and they've put in place these commitments to review, to do a root and branch analysis of what's going wrong, and to put in place measures which will proactively ensure that their supply systems are more resilient. And on top of that, as a result of our second investigation into customer care, they're also putting in place improvements to the way that they handled the situation, because things will go wrong. There will be times when there will be a supply interruption. So then what's really important is that South East Water do the right thing by their customers. And we found that there also, their communications were confusing. Customers weren't able to decide how to deal with the situation. They weren't able to make choices about how to find alternative water provision. And when South East Water did provide alternative water supplies, they did that badly as well. There were queues at petrol stations with people queuing up for bottled water. They failed to deliver water to people on their priority service register who were vulnerable. So again, they are putting in place already improvements to make sure that if things do go wrong, they will provide a much better level of customer service.
Kent Online reports.
Four people have been hurt in a crash at a notorious crossroads near Ashford. Police and paramedics were called to the junction between the A20 Hythe Road and Church Road in Smeath last night. It comes just 3 days after another collision there, which caused serious injuries. A hot iron left on furniture is thought to have started a fire at a flat in Gravesend. Crews in three engines were called to Springhead Parkway in Northfleet yesterday lunchtime. Specialist kit was used to stop smoke from spreading throughout the building. We're told no one was injured. Now, a new partnership is going to be set up in Kent to try and tackle the problem of fly tipping. It's after the first conference of its kind in the county brought together councils, the Environment Agency, Kent Police and landowners. Waste crime costs thousands of pounds to clear up every year. We can hear first from James Kudas, who's from DEFRA.
DEFRA is looking at the range of penalties that that are imposed on those that perpetrate waste crime. And so we're looking at whether they're high enough, we're looking at how they're imposed, with the aim of making sure that those that do these crimes face the consequences. Local residents will benefit from this because it'll act as a deterrent, it'll stop people in their tracks and put these cowboys out of the industry. Big difference is coming. We're introducing something called digital waste tracking. That means we'll be able to monitor waste movements around the county and indeed around the country. So we'll know what's moving where, and that will mean that people can't easily dispose of waste illegally. We're also introducing a new regime that should start next year, where those that control waste or transport waste will have to have competence, they'll have to be qualified to do it, they'll have to display their number on their advertising and on their license. So you as a resident will be able to check that these people can do that the job they're promising to do for you, and you know that they'll do it the right way. And when they take the waste away from you, you'll have confidence that it's being taken to the right disposal place, so it's done properly.
And Doug Taylor is from Hope Farm Limited.
The one thing people can do directly is to make sure they're using waste carriers with a carrier's license, and they could maybe ask a question of where are you taking this? Where is it being disposed of? You know, there are permitted sites throughout the county doing different types of waste streams and things, but you know, there should be somewhere that's got a permitted, you know, site and regulated in the right way. I think the main thing with fly tipping is that it can affect, you know, it's not just a direct effect on livestock or wildlife. In fact, that you know, whether they digest it or are affected by the pollution that's left behind, we're all you know, drinking water from which is, you know, collected in the catchments in the countryside, and if we pollute the countryside, we may well be you know, polluting our own drinking water. Not just that, it's we're trying to produce you know, the best quality food for the community, for the country, as farmers, and that's very hard to do if you've got contaminated land.
Kent Online reports.
A Kent businessman who says he was locked up for a crime he didn't commit in the 80s is applying to have his case reviewed. Simon Edgecombe spent 10 months in prison after being convicted of theft of money from a former sub-post office in Raynham following the sale of a van. He's in discussions with the Criminal Cases Review Commission, which investigates possible miscarriages of justice. The planning inspectorates agreed with Medway Council to refuse permission for 800 homes to be built in Wainscot. Developers had wanted to put properties on land off Lower Rochester Road, along with a primary school and shops. They appealed after it was turned down by the local authority. That appeal has now been dismissed following a public inquiry. Now, next on today's episode, we can hear from the girlfriend of a Kent police officer who was killed on duty. And she's told us he wouldn't believe that she was doing a skydive in his memory. 27-year-old PC Bradley Cork died in a crash near Swanley while responding to an emergency in March. His partner and best friend are raising money for the Kent, Surrey and Sussex Air Ambulance that transported him to a hospital in London. And Hannah Kitney has told me how that service was vital.
He was really, really unwell. He was really unwell at the scene, but the air ambulance came to him. They got him and got him to King's Hospital in London. And because he was able to get there so quickly, it meant that we were able to go up the same evening and have a few days in hospital with Brad and spend really precious time with him and say our goodbyes, really. So I don't know if that would have been possible if they couldn't have been there for him.
They do the most incredible work, don't they? And I guess those memories, although an absolutely horrific time, you had that time together, as you say, you had the time to say your goodbyes, and that must mean the world to you now.
Yeah, definitely. And it brought us all so close as well, because we were all there together, all our family and friends in the hospital, and it was such a strong support network, such a big team, which, yeah, it all brought us so close. And I know he'd be so proud of how we've all come together and stuck together throughout those few days, and then obviously in the months since as well.
And you mentioned that he would never believe you were going to jump out of a plane. Is it anything you'd ever thought that you would do at all in your lifetime? Like, some people have bucket lists, don't they, saying, oh, I'd love to do a skydive. Is it anything you'd ever thought of?
No, I'm really, really scared of heights. It's like my biggest fear. And he knows that. And we always used to joke about how we'd never be able to go to Go Ape as a date or something like that, because it's just my biggest fear. And I'm quite like, I like to be on the ground. I like my home comforts. I wouldn't say I'm very adventurous, but yeah, I don't know, doing this is like the opposite of everything I thought I was as well. And he's just motivated me to go and just say I say yes to everything now.
And you mentioned Katie, that's your friend, isn't it? Is that right?
Or
yeah.
So she's she's Brad's friend. Me and Katie did go to school together for years, but we were never like super close. She was actually Brad's friend for majority of the time. And of course we did stuff, if we were having birthday parties or events and stuff, Katie would come along, we'd both invite her, but it was always Katie was Brad's friend. And then when this happened, we've now become so close and we keep thinking, why the hell weren't we friends before? Like, we're so similar, we get on so well. And I think it just shows why he had us both as like in his life, because we're both so similar.
Yeah, it was obviously, you were meant to be friends, weren't you? And yeah. She's obviously convinced you to do the skydive. You must be completely blown away by the amount of support you've got and how much money you've raised. What does that mean to you?
I mean, when we set up the page, Katie said, "Oh, shall I put 1,500 as our goal?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know. That's quite a lot of money." And then I think we hit it with literally within a couple of hours. And then every day, just seeing it going up and up, it's got to a point I can't even comprehend it. And the amount of people as well that they're not just donating to mine and Katie's fundraiser, but we've all kind of, everyone is donating to this charity in memory of Brad. But like even people that like his theatre group and stuff, or his parents' theatre group, they've done fundraisers for this charity as well. So it's just so nice that we've all come together for this one like shared interest of this charity.
They're doing the skydive at Headcorn on Saturday. We do wish them both all the very best, and you can find their fundraising page online.
Kent Online News.
Plans have been put in for a link road that would be one of Kent's most expensive projects. The £77 million route in North Thanet is designed to take thousands of cars off the A28 Canterbury Road near Margate, bypassing Birchington, Westgate and Garlinge. The 6-mile stretch was first proposed in 2023 and construction could get underway in 2028. Bosses in Canterbury are considering introducing new powers to fine buskers if they make too much noise. The City Council say they've received an increase in the number of complaints about amps being used by performers. They're consulting on a public spaces protection order for equipment that's deemed to be excessive or intrusive. Well, buskers in Canterbury have been telling us what they think.
It's real music made by real people. And the fact that the council can just say, right, we're going to make it so that we can just go to you, fine you for being too loud, and just bring you down. Instead of bringing musicians down, why don't they actually help us? It doesn't make any sense for them to discourage us from being who we are, to make music that people like. Because at the end of the day, for me, music is my passion. I think music is a universal language. People love music. That's why people listen to it. That's why the music industry is a multi-billion, even trillion-dollar, you know, industry. But they want to fine me for making real music.
So yeah, my thing about it is, define what too loud is, first of all. Obviously, when we're performing on the streets, we understand if people are complaining and there's too much noise around, but the simple thing to do is for someone to tell us to keep it down, and then, because obviously we're performers, we understand, we want to sound good to others, so we're not going to ever purposely be obnoxious. So a fine is excessive, all we need to be told is to keep it down and then we'll understand. I mean, the saxophone is a loud instrument, yes, but I've never had complaints about being too loud unless I was playing, say, too late or that sort of thing. But other than that, yeah, I've never really had any complaints about being too loud.
I can understand it, as some people could be too loud. However, I do think a warning would make sense first. Too loud is pretty hard to understand as far as like whether it's a literal decibel thing or if it's a perceived volume. And as a musician, you might not know how loud you're being. So I think the right thing to do would be at least give them a warning first. if someone doesn't change their volume afterwards, I could understand a fine after that.
A derelict secondary school site near Dartford has been put up for sale. The Oasis Academy Hextable was built in the early 1970s and closed in 2016 following a drop in student numbers. The plot covers 37 acres. And finally, a baby giraffe at a Kent Animal Park has been named after England footballer Jude Bellingham. It's the first one to be born at Portland Reserve near Hythe in 8 years. Staff voted for the name in honour of Bellingham's performance at the World Cup.
Kent Online Sports.
Well, football fever is certainly gripping Kent ahead of England's World Cup semi-final tonight. The Three Lions are taking on Argentina in Atlanta. And I've been chatting to Daryl Hayden, who's the chief exec of the Kent FA.
It's great for the country, for everyone involved in football, that we're at a semi-final. I think the men's team have done pretty well over the last few competitions, you know, two finals in the last few Euros, and then a quarterfinal last time round for the World Cup and the semi-final in 2018. So obviously not as successful as the Lionesses yet, but hopefully, fingers crossed, tonight we get a positive performance.
What are your thoughts on Argentina? Some pundits are saying we should be able to beat them.
I think it's going to be a very difficult game once you get to the semi-finals of a World Cup. Every team's a good team. And, you know, we've got history of Argentina. I think back to 98 with David Beckham. And was it Diego Simeone, wasn't it? So I think, yeah, it's there's history there. But, you know, there's a real togetherness in this England team. And we've got, you know, world-class players in Kane and Bellingham and you know, a really strong midfield as well. So hopefully we can do enough to get over the line.
You mentioned the two players there I was going to highlight. Are they the ones that kind of the younger players coming through the Kent FA talk about all the time? Who are kind of like the main role models at the moment out of this England
side?
Yeah,
I guess so. I mean, if you looked at the grassroots game and you walked around the training sessions of our grassroots club, I would have thought a number of the players have got Bellingham or Kane on the back of their shirt, probably alongside Rice and Saka, probably those guys. Those are the guys that are, you know, that real top level for us. So, yeah, definitely those two.
You mentioned there about grassroots and also the Lionesses, and we know how much the success of the Lionesses inspired girls in particular to get into football. How much will this tournament inspire the next generation of footballers, do you think?
Yeah, I we saw a real huge uplift and increase in number of females playing the game off the back of the Lionesses. I think this has the same impact, but not just for youngsters coming through. I think there's, you know, we're in a really strong position in Kent. And for football, we've got around 63,000 players that play every week. We've got 4,500 odd teams that play every week. So it's a really strong kind of position, a really strong foundation to grow on. But I think we tend to see that. We do see a lot more growth off the back of the major tournaments, not just in the youngsters coming through, but, you know, there's an opportunity for lots of varying formats that we offer across Kent. So you've got walking football, we've got vets football. We're seeing real big growth in those areas. But also not just playing. I think you also see off the back of these people that might want to get into coaching, they might want to get into refereeing, they might want to get into volunteering and volunteering a local grassroots club. So there's lots of opportunities and we do see kind of a big uplift off the back of these major tournaments and across all kind of formats of the game.
It's an 8 p.m. kickoff. Do enjoy the match wherever you're watching. And staying with football, Gillingham have been left with some injury concerns after their pre-season friendly against Dover Athletic. The Gills won 3-0 with goals from Kadeem Harris, Louis Dial and Sam Gale. But several players were already missing and now Armani Little and Bradley Dack are being assessed after both limping off the pitch. That's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on socials. Plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.